Welcome to the Why We Build podcast. Join Steve Wheeler and our host, Greg Waller, to explore the world of remodeling. Whether you're on the production team, design team, or managing the whole show, you can expect insights, tips, and stories that inspire and educate. So let's dive into the Why We Build podcast.
Welcome to the Why We Build podcast. I'm your host, Greg Waller. Thank you for joining me today, as always. Now, we're interested in hearing from you. If you have a topic or a guest suggestion, please reach out and let us know. You can always get me, Greg, at remodelersadvantage.com. Now, this episode was recorded last week. And since then, I, along with our membership success manager, Anna Cherie Thompson, and our very own office manager, Tabitha Washington, had the privilege of spending two full days with a phenomenal group, office manager intensive attendees at the RA headquarters in Linthicum, Maryland. And let me tell you, when you spend time with people who are the heartbeat of their companies, the folks who keep everything moving, everything organized, everything sane, you start to see just how essential today's topic really is. Now, the difference between orientation and onboarding isn't a small nuance, it's a leadership choice. And honestly, it's one of the biggest gaps in the remodeling world. Orientation is the quick tour. Here's the handbook. Here's the bathroom. Here's where we put the good pens so the carpenters don't steal them. Onboarding is something entirely different. Onboarding is a designed experience. It's intentional. It's structured. It's the first, 30, 60, 90 days where a company shows a new hire. This is who we are. This is how we operate. And this is what success looks like. Orientation tells people where to sit. Onboarding tells them where they're going and what it takes to be successful. And last week, our office manager intensive group, we spent a lot of time talking about expectations, clarity, and the systems that help people thrive. Again and again, I heard the same revelation. Most companies don't have an onboarding problem. They have a problem setting expectations. People aren't failing because they're incapable. They're failing because nobody defined the job, nobody explained how we measure success, and nobody built the runway long enough for them to actually get here. Which brings me to the guest of today's episode. Now, we're joined by someone who has dedicated her career to solving this exact challenge. Erin Longmoon is a workplace matchmaker, a systems builder, and a full-time toxic culture exterminator. Through Zephyr Connects, Zephyr HR, and their new culture-driven platform for the trades, PeepSmart, she helps small businesses attract the right people, manage them wisely, and build teams that don't just work, they work well together. Erin has a gift for cutting through the noise and getting to the heart of what makes teams function. She believes that clear expectations and a structured onboarding process aren't just HR tasks, they're culture building tools. They set the tone for everything that follows. And you know what? She is right. So today we're breaking down why orientation and onboarding must be different, why expectations must be defined and not assumed, and why a great onboarding experience is one of the most powerful retention tools that you have. All right, Erin, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's beautiful. It's sunny. You can see it on my face. I like sunshine. What about you?
Always doing great. You're always upbeat. That's what I like about you.
Oh, yeah. The glass is always three quarters full.
All right. Very good. So let's start in the beginning. What inspired you to start Zephyr Connects?
Well, that's a really good question. So I was a business coach for a little while. I always have worked for small businesses in my whole career. I tried corporate one time. I lasted 6 weeks. I absolutely hated having guardrails. That's just not how I'm wired. So I've always worked in small businesses. And then I pivoted to helping small businesses as a coach for a while. This is after, you know, owning four businesses, I think, by then. And just like, it's my passion and what I do. I'm an entrepreneur through and through. But one of the things I started noticing over probably about the first 2 years was this pain point, if you will, of recruiting. And, you know, owners are busy and they are focused on what they do best. And they're focused on serving their clients and being leaders. They're not recruiters. And oftentimes people on their team weren't necessarily recruiters either. And then, so I started looking for a partner, like, okay, let's just partner with somebody who could help us solve that problem. And I struggled to find any recruiting services that were focused on small businesses. They were all, you know, built for the bigger guys for volume. They are built for speed. They are built for companies that have really robust internal HR departments that can vet candidates. So basically they're just sourcing. They're just sourcing lists of candidates based on resumes, and that's all they do. And that doesn't work for small businesses. You know, then the owner still has to go and, you know, do all the interviewing assessments, all the things, and they didn't have time, or they just were making, unfortunately, poor hiring decisions because they're under duress. And the other thing is, on top of that, they're charging 30%, right, of the person's salary, which is outrageous. So I don't know. I just kind of had this aha moment of like, I need to solve this problem and like quickly. So I pivoted about 3 years into being a coach and became Zephyr Connects.
Where did the name come from?
Everybody asked me that. So I was having a cocktail and some dinner with some friends of ours. And this was back when I was in Seattle. I'm now in Cleveland. And I was talking to my friend, my girlfriend, and I was like, I need to name this thing. I didn't want to name it my name. I've never been into that because I just want to, you know, if it becomes a legacy thing, I don't want it to be tied to me. Mm-hmm. So I was really against that. And I said, I just wanted to convey this idea that we will make it easy. One of the hardest parts of owning a business, which is finding people, we're going to take it off their plate and make it easy. And she just spit out the word Zephyr, and which means a gentle breeze, in case anyone doesn't know. And I just knew in the moment, I was like, that's it. Like, that's just it. So I don't know. She channeled something from the divine. Like, I don't know, but that was it. And then the story is, we started as Zephyr Recruiting, actually. And then about 2 years in, I want to say, we were having a meeting with my team, and somehow it just came up. I can't remember exactly how, but we're like, we do so much more than recruiting. Like, recruiting isn't the right message because, again, the industry does something so different than what we do. So after just chatting it out and thinking it through and stuff, we just came up with the word connects. And we're like, that's what we do. We connect great employers with great employees. And, you know, that's our jam. So now our recruiters are not recruiters. They're called connectors. And that's what we're all about. So that's how the name came about.
You know, you and I get to spend time together at different events throughout the, you know, the remodeling industry and that sort of stuff. And I love it when I'm at your booth and I can tell people that I was hired through Zephyr Connects. To me, is one of my, you know, one of my favorite things to be able to say when we're together.
I love those it too. I love it too. Sorry.
For those that don't know, how does Zephyr Connects work with small businesses?
So our model is set up that we become the recruiting department. Whether you hire one person a year, doesn't matter, or whether you hire, you know, eight, it like doesn't matter. We operate like we are your recruiting department. So we're going to take time up front to really get to know your company, your history, your culture. Why did you go into business doing what you do? Or is it a legacy business? Why did you choose to take it over and become a part of it? What's your mission, vision, goals? Talk to us about your culture, your core values, which are at the heart of all of it, right? And your people and your team. And we even get to know the team. Like, we meet team members so that we can get to know everybody really well in a really well-rounded way. And by doing that, then that gives us all of the jam that we need in order to find the right people that will really fit. So I can't even remember your question anymore, Greg, because I'm like totally going off on my track.
No, just the process. If I was a company coming to you looking for hiring help, what does that process look like?
So I actually, after about 2 years in, we've been working with residential remodelers and design build companies for pretty much day one. And I started to see this really beautiful thing that you guys have all figured out, which is this design build phase, right? So I actually decided to mimic it. So we have three phases. The first phase is what you would kind of align with your design phase. Again, that onboarding I was just talking about. And then we do research, we do discovery, we try to figure out what's going on in your market, what your competition's like, who we're actually looking for. And then we pull together a whole strategy, you know, for us. And you think about it like marketing. So we put together the marketing strategy, and that's phase one. And then we do a launch meeting with our clients and we show it just like you would do a design review or something with your client, right? And that's where you get all the feedback, make sure you're all on the same page. Then you go into phase two. So aligning with construction phase or the build phase, for us, it's the active recruiting phase. So that's where we're pulling in the candidates and we're fully interviewing them. We're doing multiple interviews. We do at least one on video. We are often doing assessments like you might do DISC or StrengthsFinder or, you know, any of those. Sometimes even skills assessments we will recommend, especially specific jobs like accounting or bookkeeping or office management, things like that. Even estimating, there are skills tests to make sure that the candidates have the actual skill level you need. We also do the background checks, the reference checks. I mean, we just take care of all of it. And once we find someone who dials in and has checked all your boxes and has scored really high on the scorecard, then that's the ones we're going to present to our clients. So we're really narrowing the pool down to the best. And just to give some reference points, I mean, if we get, you know, we'll take that, that big, like think of a funnel, right? And you got all these candidates coming in through the top of the funnel. We're going to narrow it all the way down to the bottom. And if we get 2%, 2-3% of that top of the funnel down to you, then we're doing a good job. Like we're not here to bring you 50 candidates that you have to figure out. We're here to bring you 1, 2, maybe 3 tops of the ones that really fit. So that's what we do. And then post construction phase or our post recruiting phase is just, it's kind of like your punch list. We check in a few times with both the candidate and the employer to be like, how are things going? Is this person really aligning well with your values? Are they showing up and, you know, having the skill level that you expected? We even check in with the candidate because if they're not happy, you know, things can go awry. So we make sure that things are going well with them. So that's kind of how we've broken the process down.
I don't think it's a new thing, but certainly AI getting involved in the hiring process, it really sounds like you make it very human.
Correct.
So when you're looking at a resume, and there's so much more to the process than the resume, what is something that you're looking for that might stand out, that might give you a clue that this is someone that needs to get down to that 2-3% of the funnel?
Yeah, it's interesting. We look at resumes as stories. Like we're trying to read the story that's being told by this person's experience and their journey as in a, you know, like in their career. And that's one thing I think AI can unfortunately miss. Like they're just looking for keywords, right? Like what are the keywords? And if the candidate in front of you may not use the right keywords, but they still have an awesome story, they're going to get bypassed by AI. Now, I mean, it's, you know, it is an efficient tool. I often will tell people, you know, use it, but use it wisely, use it cautiously. But we do review resumes with a human eye because what our recruiters are trained to do is to look for that connection of that story and all the little nuances that are going on in that resume. So, you know, somebody who might stand out is somebody who writes just a really compelling executive summary or, you know, they're top thing that tells a little bit more than just, hey, I'm really good at XYZ, but they might actually tell a little bit of a story about, you know, I chose this career because of this or, you know, something more personal. We love those kinds of resumes. We still love cover letters here as old and antiquated as that is. We still love them because the same thing, they tell a really great story. They help us to know who that person is before we bring them in. But, you know, it's kind of like you hear in accounting, right? Like your P&L is telling you a story, right? And your job is to kind of interpret it. And that's how we look at resumes as well. They are telling a story and it's our job to interpret it.
All right. So, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, core values within our industry, within Remodeler's Advantage. What are you doing to sort of suss out those values and alignment between a potential hire and the companies you're working with?
So it goes back to the idea of stories. So what we're doing, so granted, you know, at this point, we know the core values of our client very well, right? So we'll make that assumption. But then when we're in front of candidates, especially ones that do seem strong, it's all about the kinds of questions you ask. And what we're looking for is peeling away layers of the onion. I use that analogy all the time. And the story that is in that, in those layers of the onion. So we might start with a behavior-based question. Tell me about a time when, you know, I don't know, you struggled with getting a project done on time by the deadline. You knew that's probably not going to happen. How did you handle that? Like, what did you do? They're going to give you the top answer, right? The first thing that they think you want to hear, whatever. Then you start out, you have to go deeper though. Then you say, okay, well, tell me why you made that choice. What was it about, you know, like what, why did you choose that option? Whatever that may be. And then you just keep asking more and more questions like that. Like every time they answer, ask another question related to that answer and just keep going until you feel like you've kind of gotten a nice picture of their story. It'll reveal a lot about how they think, how they act, what they, you know, what's important to them when they're making big decisions like that. And it often at the core of that, if you can get good at it, you can see a core value in there. That's what we're looking for, is what's the core value that drove that decision? What's the core value that drove that behavior? And because a lot of times candidates don't know their core values. Like they don't have fancy words like we do as companies, you know, to express them. And so if you just come right out and say, you know, tell me about your core values, they're going to say the same ones that everybody says, honesty, integrity, you know, right? And it's not that those aren't necessarily true, but it's like, but how do those show up? Like, okay, if that's truly your core value, you know, I want to know stories about how they actually show up in your life and in the way you show up for work. So that's why going deeper, don't just accept the top line answer of the question you ask, ask more and more to peel away those layers, and you can start unveiling those, like the actual core values that drive those people.
Yeah, storytelling is such a valuable tool in all parts of business, but to use it here, I think it's pretty remarkable as well.
Yeah.
Now, the whole reason why you and I wanted to have this conversation, it was about the difference between onboarding and orientation.
Yeah.
And maybe when a owner, supervisor is gonna, you know, cut bait on a person that might not be working out.
Right.
Tell me, what is the difference in the language of Zephyr Connects between orientation and onboarding?
So orientation is what you would consider your typical first week, fill out your paperwork, learn, meet everybody in the office, go do job site visits, learn about the core values, you know, like just sort of that setting of a quick foundation of who the company is, introducing the people around, right? And for some that takes a day or a half a day. For others, it might be over the course of a week. It just depends on your process, but that's truly orientation, right? Then you have training and onboarding, and they're not necessarily, it's like training's under the umbrella to us of onboarding. Onboarding including, it includes training, but it includes so much more that I think we're seeing that's getting somewhat missed. So there's that piece. And then you and I were also talking about the giving up too quickly, you know, and saying, okay, it's been 30 days. There's no way this person isn't working out. And kind of having to evaluate, well, wait a minute before, you know, push pause on that button for a quick second and let's evaluate what's actually happening here. So, you know, but orientation really is that just kind of quick getting them into your system. And then onboarding is really taking it deeper and doing the training. And then there's also social emotional onboarding. So hopefully we can unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you want me to
go?
All right. I will say more. So first off, social emotional onboarding is a really important component that's often missed by employers because we're typically thinking about how do I get this person up to speed on the job, right? Like that's where we're focused. But really, social emotional onboarding is the component of onboarding people into your culture and into your team and integrating them into your business. And we are social emotional creatures, humans, and we need that. It doesn't matter how you're wired. We need some level of that. And there's data that shows that, let me back up. This needs to start from the day the person accepts your job. Not even on start date, right? Because there's data that shows that new employees, when they accept a position, they'll have buyer's remorse, if you will, in the first 48 hours. And that's where they stop and like, oh my gosh, did I take the right job? Did I make the right move? They start getting all these like fears in their mind that maybe this isn't the right place. And it's super normal, but that is such a key time to reinforce that they made the right decision. So in those first 48 hours, you want to do something to get them to feel welcomed already. So whether it's have your team members reach out, oh my God, I heard you accepted the role. We're so excited to meet you. Or it can be a little gift. It can be just a call from, you know, the owner to say, I'm so glad that you decided to join us. We're really looking forward. I think this is going to be we're going to have a great relationship together. Just, it doesn't matter what it is as much as it's that it is something, right? And it can be super simple. It can even be automated. If you want, you know, that's fine, whatever works for your company, but start from that moment. And then continue that social emotional onboarding. I mean, honestly, for up to an entire year, but obviously as the person gets more integrated, you can pull back on what it actually is, but you want to do things like make sure that they have lunch or some kind of one-on-one with every single person on the team. You know, they need to get to know everybody if you want them to feel like they're a part. Now that can take time and that's fine. You know, maybe it's one lunch a week if that's all you guys can fit in. It's but just an intentional process of integrating them in and teaching them about the culture, teaching them, introducing them to everybody, trying to develop relationships between them and your new team members. And that right there will skyrocket your retention rate. Like that, if you do nothing else but that, that will skyrocket your retention rate.
So in the design build process, you're actually mimicking what we call the dark period and how to avoid that. So what we call the dark period is when the client writes the check and then they don't hear from us for 30 or 60 days.
Right.
So what you've done, like that's exactly what we advocate for, is keep that client aware of what's going on. Maybe you're taking them to lunch. I don't know what it is, but that again, you have stolen from the design build community.
I love it. See, we're meant to be together, Greg. We're meant to be together.
Well, we at RA, we call that R&D, which means rip off and duplicate.
I love it. Yep. And it's funny because the reason why is because it just works, right? It makes sense. That's why it's rip R&D, because what you guys are doing with your clients just naturally makes sense to do it with your employees as well. Right. Because it works. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. So why do so many companies sort of fail at this, whether it's the social emotional or just a really strong onboarding process? What do you think prevents companies from doing this?
I mean, the things I hear mostly is just, I know I need it, but I don't have the time. They don't know how. It's not as easy for most owners. I'm not saying for every owner, but for most owners to sit down and just do it, right? They'll have to do research. They have to figure out the right way. They have to think it through. It's especially if you want to put true intention behind it and make it good and solid and effective, it takes effort. And, we're working in our businesses way more than we get to work on our business, and that's one of the things I love about your roundtable process, right? You get people out of the day-to-day and you get them to focus on their business. But even then, I know there's limited time. Basically, they go home with the homework, right? We got to go build out an onboarding process. It's not like they're doing it at the roundtable. So then they've got to go block that time out, figure out how they're going to do it. Or they don't have the expertise on their team to just hand it to someone as well. So I do think that's the biggest barrier to entry, if you will, around getting a solid onboarding process. And the things that are out there, I mean, there are guides and things like that, but they're not custom, right? Like you get these guides and you're like, okay, great, I'll just use this checklist. And then you start going to a checklist and you're like, this isn't going to work for my business. This isn't going to work for me. And so then you're stuck again, having to create it. So that I do believe is the biggest hurdle.
So we've talked about this a little bit offline as well. This idea of like 30, 60, 90, I hear it at roundtable meetings. People talk about, PIPs, personal improvement plans, and they're putting this, finite time frame on these things. How long should onboarding really take? Is it a week? Is it a month? Is it 90 days or more? You mentioned a year for some of the social emotional stuff.
Yes. I think I personally here at Zephyr, we think a year is because there, again, data, I wish I could quote the sites. I don't remember those kinds of details, but definitely data shows that people do not truly feel like they can own their job and be like the master until a minimum of a year. And if it's a more complicated job, it's going to take even longer. Right. And there's definitely, my husband's a software engineer. It can take him 2 years before he really feels like he's at a place of sort of like mastery at his new employer, because they'll have different database systems. They have different languages that they're programming and they've got different ways of putting things together. You can't learn that in 30, 60, 90 days. Right. So truly to really own your role, it can take a while. And so I'll flip it really quick. I mean, you started at Remodelers Advantage. How long ago is that? How long?
A little over 2 years now.
Okay. And how long did you feel like it took you to where you were like, yeah, I got this. I can go to work every day and I basically don't have very many questions and I can do my job.
Oh, by 9 a.m. on the first day.
Oh,
dialed in. No, it did. It took a while to really understand the systems, especially working remote. Like that was a challenge.
Right.
One of the things I'm most grateful for in my onboarding process was the fact that I got to spend a year with Tim Fowler, who's, I succeeded him in this role. So they were, it was very intentional that we did that. I went on site visits with him for consulting. We did his podcast together. We did other stuff together. And it was important to see how all of it worked. So I mean, again, forever grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of companies aren't able to, you know, afford that or even, you know, to do those sorts of things.
It's true. It's true. But you see, I mean, the point, right, is that it took you a while just to understand even brand. I mean, we don't think about that consciously, but to really understand like what a company is about and how they show up in the world to their clients and stuff takes time, you know, all of that. So honestly, we think a year at a minimum, more complex, positions. I wouldn't have the expectation that your employee is going to really be a master until a couple of years, you know, maybe 2 years in, if it's a highly complicated role. They can still be a master of their own individual craft. Like they could be a great estimator, for example, with solid skills, but it's still going to take them truly a year to try to get to know your business, your clients, the way you do it, your vendors, you know, all the things that are nuanced about your business. So we need, you know, I think when you and I were talking about this, it was just this point of patience. You know, I think as small business employers, we just want people to get up and running. We don't have time to wait. Like, I get that. I'm a small employer too. I only have a team of 10. Like, we're rocking and rolling. But the truth is that we got, you know, I have to be patient and not give up. You know, I mean, I have a recruiter. This is a couple of years ago. She joined us. And, you know, at first glance, for the first few months, I was like, we're going to watch this one. I'm not quite sure that she's really going to get the Zephyr way. But we worked with her and we gave her extra training and extra support. And, you know, now she's as you would expect, she's amazing. And, you know, some of our other team members come on and they just kind of get it fairly quickly. But if I use that get it fairly quickly as my barometer for everybody, then I would miss out like on this particular recruiter and her amazing abilities that she now has and brings to our team. So, you know, we kind of have a little bit more patience, I think.
I agree. Now we have to perform along the way. And a quick example, I worked for a company and I was a high performing project manager. I had high volume jobs, high revenue jobs. But my boss is like, you're not going to get this for 3 years. It's going to take 3 years before you really understand the way this company operates, our back end systems, our frontline systems, and the clientele and things like that. And he was right. I mean, by the time I got to year, let's say 2.5, I had it pretty much down. But it was, you know, again, they had patience. I mean, I feel like I proved myself along the way that I was worth keeping along. So that brings me to if we're measuring, right? We want to measure things. That's what matters usually. How do you measure success in an onboarding process? The social emotional stuff, very difficult to put a number on it.
It
but
is.
We have to somehow. So how do we measure those things?
Well, so that's an interesting one. And that kind of goes maybe back to that 30, 60, 90 days. We were talking about how arbitrary that is. And like, where did that come from? And again, I'm like you, I don't know who created that concept, but you know, we should always in an onboarding process have a daily feedback loop, right? Like we want to be giving constant feedback to the new hire, but at 30, 60, 90 or 15, 45, whatever, like it doesn't matter, but you want to set a very like established intentional cadence for a true sit down evaluation conversation, right? And that is so because you can't put numbers and KPIs, like you said, on social emotional stuff, but what you can do is ask really pointed, very intentional questions around it. Do you feel like you're a part of the team? Do you feel like you know everybody or who, you know, the people you've met? Do you feel welcome here? Do you feel, or even more open-ended questions, you know, what's been your experience of the team and the dynamics? How have you felt being here, you know? And then people can say, yeah, you know, like I feel great. Everybody's been amazing. If they're not saying that in that kind of enthusiastic way, and they're kind of like, yeah, it's been pretty good. You know, I'm kind of getting to know people. Well, is that person's personality? Maybe they're a little more reserved, or is it that there's something maybe not actually happening there that should be happening? So unfortunately, that's kind of it. Like you gotta look for behavior cues and clues for the social emotional piece. Now the other parts, you definitely got to have KPIs, right? And they have to be realistic KPIs. One of the stories that I've had, I have so many stories, but we had a client hired a sales rep. Sales reps, you know, are an interesting group of people. And when you get it right, they're phenomenal. But a lot of them, unfortunately, you know, aren't necessarily as great as they can sell themselves to be in the recruiting process, right? It's like, man, if you could sell our stuff as well as you sold yourself in the recruiting, you'll knock it out of the park. But that's not always how it works. So with salespeople, you have to have KPIs, but they also have to be realistic because they may have great sales skills. But again, the like learning how to sell something, especially complex like construction and remodeling, that takes time. Even if they sold it at another company, right? Like we get a lot of clients who are like, I want someone who's experienced selling residential remodeling. Okay, first off, that is the tiny percentage of the actual candidate pool, but okay, we'll find them. And then when we do find them, they do know like the ins and outs. They know the language, which is great. They might know some things, but they're still not going to understand you and the way you guys do it, right? So you got to be patient with them, but have KPIs. So the KPIs can be reasonable for the first 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Like I'm hiring one right now. My KPI for this guy for the first 30 days is he has to watch 20 of my discovery calls. He has to meet every one of my team members for 30 minute meet and greet, right? He has to read my entire playbook and be able to answer questions on the spot. That's what he's doing in 30 days. I'm not expecting him to go talk to a single customer, right? Because he just needs a foundation. That foundation is going to take 30 days just to get it in. Then it's going to take another probably 60 to get to the point where he can fluidly, seamlessly just talk about it, right? So I don't expect a single like real sales conversation to happen with him for probably 90 days, you know, unless he's, and he might surprise me, which would be great, but you know, I want to be patient, but I have given him very specific measurables for his KPIs. So you do want to have those when a number, and I'm saying this in air quotes where people can't, who's just listening, you know, makes sense for the role.
So you must have seen this, and I think it's probably what sparked this conversation, but have you seen a strong link between a solid onboarding process and long-term retention of an employee?
Absolutely, 100%. So one of my clients, I think they'd let me shout them out, but Better Builders, they're an okay. RA member. They've been a long-standing client of ours. They have a rock solid onboarding process that they have built for every position. They're just... you know, they're one of the larger companies. So they've got some luxury there of being able to have spent the time and have the resources. I get that. But we've hired client or employees for them back in, I want to say it was 2018, 2019. They're probably going to call me and be like, no, it was this date, but whatever, who are still there. And I know part of it was us finding great people, obviously, but mm-hmm. we can find great people and they won't stick if they don't have a good onboarding process. So they stick there because they do have a really fantastic onboarding process, and they include the social emotional as well as the technical, as well as the like orientation piece. They just, yeah. So we see that all the time.
So for a company that is, you know, maybe not as big as they are, mm-hmm. maybe you don't have an HR department, which is, you know, hopefully part of what you're filling in.
Yeah.
Where should they start besides calling Zephyr Connects?
The DIY. I mean, I think part of it, where should they start? I mean, really, you got to educate yourself a little bit on what is a good onboarding process. And you know, one advantage of your roundtable format, right, is that you can learn from your peers. So looking at your peers in your roundtable or calling some of your peers in Remodelers Advantage who you believe probably have this down just through conversation or whatever, and ask them to show you what they built, you know, and R&D. Just R&D it, you know. Obviously, you can use AI these days. Very educational tool. You gotta be careful, obviously. But we're not talking about legal stuff at the moment. So, you know, ask ChatGPT, interview me, help me build out an onboarding process. And a little tip I learned about AI is you have to tell your AI platform, whether it's Chat or Claude or whatever, like what role you want it to play. In that conversation, right? So act as a chief HR officer and let's create an onboarding process together for my estimator role or whatever. Each role will be unique. You'll have some foundational things, obviously they're the same, but each role will have some uniqueness to it and see what it spits out, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can massage that. So, you know, probably start with both of those and see if what you get and, you know, block out time. I mean, that's the most important piece probably is block out time, whether it's 30 minutes a week over 12 weeks, or whether it's half a day, you know, a little like just close your door or even go off site. And like, I'm just getting this done. I'm just going to take half a day and just get this thing done, whatever it is, but you got to have the time to devote to it as well.
All right. So we're going to jump to some rapid fire questions here. Okay. I've not pre-fed this to you. This is not like a debate or anything here, but okay. I'm gonna ask you some questions. Your favorite book or author?
Okay, can I do both? My favorite author has been Brené Brown because she's all about bravery and courage, and I just think that that's how I live my life. Life is too short to not be brave. And then probably my favorite, like let's say, business book is, oh, I know what it is. 15. Hold on, where is it? It's going to be in my office. It's not going to be here. Darn it. The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership.
Okay.
My most favorite book on leadership. It's life changing. Everybody should read that book.
All right. Do you have a morning ritual or daily habit that you swear by?
Oh, good question. Yes. Making my bed. I actually love it. I get up, I do my shower and everything. And then once I'm done, I go and I make my bed and I put my pillows back on. I open up the curtains. I was just telling someone the other day, there's something about that simple ritual that just makes me feel like, okay, it's time to get going. Like, this is the message that I'm telling myself is start of the day. Let's do it.
I've heard that before. It's a quick win, right? It gets you motivated.
Yep. Yeah. And then every time I walk by my bedroom, cause I work from home, you know, we're a virtual company. I walk by my bedroom. It looks beautiful. I love it. Right. And you probably know this about me, but I don't know if everyone does, but I actually have a degree in interior architecture and I used to do interior design. So I love beautiful things. Like I want things to look really nice. So it makes me happy. Yeah.
Very good. If you could have coffee with any leader, living or not, who would it be?
Oh, wow. That's a really, really, really good question. Oh, that's so loaded. Wow. There's so many. I think right now in this time, I would love to sit down and have coffee with probably any one of our founding fathers, but yeah. Let's, you know, any one of them, whoever's available, I'll take it. I want to hear more about what their perspective was. I would love to sit down with them and also talk about what's going on and see what they would say about it.
Yeah. I'd like to know what they think about the musical Hamilton.
Oh, yes. That would be great. We'll go see Hamilton. Then we'll go have, it doesn't have to be coffee, right? We could have some whiskey. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good.
What is your go-to way to recharge?
That's so funny because I don't really recharge. I love it.
Your battery's always full.
Okay. Something that I love, which I mean, probably wouldn't shock some people, but I love to shop. I do. Yeah. I love fashion. I love to shop. So like for me, that's almost like me time, right? Like I'm not going to be bugged by anybody because I'm alone and I can put my phone away and I can just go out there and look at beautiful things and touch beautiful fabrics. It sounds so funny because I know most people would be like meditate or I don't know, go play golf. But for me, I really love to go shop.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. The last question.
Okay.
If Zephyr Connects had a theme song, what would it be?
Oh, we do have a theme song. Oh, you're gonna stump me though. What is it called? Oh my gosh, it's called something like Vacation. I think it's called Vacation. Hold on. It's called Dirty Heads. It's Vacation by Dirty Heads.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're gonna be able to hear this. But oh no, we don't want that. Ooh, mute. Sorry. I wanted to play it for you, but of course they have to have some stupid ad. But it's like, I'm on vacation.
Oh, I know that one. Yeah.
I love my occupation. That is us. Hands down.
We'll use that music for the Instagram post that we do.
Okay.
I think
that would be
get
awesome.
Away with that. Without,
so good.
Without
so good. Music. So good. And can I say one quick thing?
Absolutely.
About just FYI, I know that this is probably going to air, you know, at different times, but starting January of 2026, Zephyr Connects is now going to offer managed HR services. So we can be your, not just your recruiter, but your full HR support and help with that onboarding. So I just have to say that because I'm so excited that we're going to be adding these services to help our clients.
Say a little more about that. That does sound exciting.
It is exciting. So we have some incredible talent on our team now that we didn't have in the past. And so we have decided as a group to start helping our clients even more. So we will, like we've kind of touched upon, we will recruit some great people, but then maybe they don't work out because maybe the onboarding isn't strong or, you know, maybe the dynamic within the team isn't really healthy. There's just different things. Or sometimes it's just basic stuff, but we really want to have a bigger impact. Our mission is to eradicate toxic workplaces. We don't necessarily like talk about that all the time, but that is what we're here for. We believe everyone should love their work, both owners and employers and employees. And so we want to have a bigger impact on that and helping to create that. So we are adding managed HR. So we're going to have everything from just a help help desk level for people who, you know, maybe already have a little bit of HRM, but just need that compliance kind of support. And then we're also going to have an HR generalist level. So if you don't have HR and you need a little bit more support around having an HR generalist, but you don't need a full-time HR generalist on your team, then we're going to offer that. And then we'll have more of an HR management where you'll get the generalist, but then you'll also get a management level on top. And that management level is going to be more about like strategy and helping you develop your people strategy, helping you develop, let's say, intentional onboarding processes or culture, helping you to up level your leadership. If you want to help train them, we will do some trainings, you know, just all that kind of stuff. So you can have sort of a fractional HR partner who, and just like Zephyr, we're going to be all about knowing your culture, your core values, all that thing. We're not transactional. Everything we do is going to be in alignment with who our clients are. So that's, we're going to start offering that January. Well, whatever that first Monday of January is. So we're very, very excited. It's called Zephyr HR. It's just under Zephyr Connect. So we'll still be Zephyr Connect, but that service will be called Zephyr HR.
That is awesome. And yeah. Quite frankly, that was my last question. It says, what are you most excited about right
That's
now?
That's what I am most excited. Yes,
totally. I'm so glad you shared that with us.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me today. Appreciate it. And I look forward to our next hang.
Yeah.
Are you going to be at JT?
I'm going to be at JT.
I'll be there too. So we'll awesome. Have a good time.
Yeah. I'll be talking about AI and onboarding actually. So come check it out.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Aaron, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Right. As we wrap up, remember this. People don't fail because they're the wrong hire nearly as often as they fail because we didn't give them a clear path. Orientation is a moment and onboarding is a journey. And when we design that journey with intention, clarity, expectations, company culture, we give our teams the chance to succeed at the highest level. Big thanks to Erin Longmoon from Zephyr Connects for bringing her insight and her passion for building healthy, functional workplaces. And thank you for being here, for caring about your craft, and for doing the work that makes this industry better. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Why We Build podcast.
That's it for this episode of the Why We Build podcast. We hope you found something valuable to take back to your team. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Please send in your ideas for future episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. If you want more information about our roundtables program, production manager groups, design manager groups, consulting services, or any of the Remodelers Advantage offerings, please visit remodelersadvantage.com or email Greg at remodelersadvantage.com.